Hi everyone, this is Janice, your neighborhood nutritionist. I've spent the last couple of years helping busy office professionals upgrade their health through upgrading their nutrition. And one thing was very obvious. Nobody's got time to read up on all the scientific stuff to know fact from fiction. So each week, I will talk to you about a different topic or concept in nutrition in simple, everyday terms, so you are empowered to make the best nutritional decisions. Get ready to learn about some new stuff, gain new insights into old concepts, and super boost your health. Okay, so today I'm very happy to have Jill Beccaro, an integrative health practitioner and owner of Wellness Riot, here to talk to me. So welcome, Jill, and thank you so much for joining me on my podcast.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
So maybe let's start with, what is integrative health and what has been your journey to where we are now?
I do a lot of sleuthing or getting to the root cause of health issues because I found that most people know what is going on. They can't sleep, they have excess weight, low energy, et cetera. But I help people figure out why it's going on because that's what's helped me along the way. And I like to help people who feel overwhelmed with information. There's so much out there. It's really easy to get to the point where you just want to wave the white flag. So that's kind of what I do with my clients, and how I got there, it really started from being a child. So my mom was a 70s granola mom. We had blackstrap molasses and wheat germ in everything. Nobody would trade lunches with me because they were so healthy. I always ate my lunch because nobody wanted to swap, you know, the apple for a bag of chips. And then, you know, when I became a teenager and went to college, I started being able to make my own choices. So I totally rebelled. I ate whatever I wanted. And I really started to learn what you eat and how that affects how you feel. Did I listen to it all the time? No, but at least I started learning. And then at that same time, my mom went through some health issues that we related to artificial sweeteners. So I really started to question these magic bullets, you know, like artificial sweeteners and, you know, no fat fats and things like that. And then when I was 35, I became pregnant. And because I was 35, I automatically got lumped into this high risk category, even though I was way healthier at 35 than I was at 25. So my wheels started to spin and I was kind of just asking, questioning the markers, like, how are we really looking at the right markers for health? Like, is it just age? Or, you know, are there other things that we should really be looking at? And then a few years later, I started to experience some issues, kind of like acid reflux, but not exactly. I was eating a pretty healthy meat, you know, diet at that point, although I understand like eating pretty healthy can mean like a thousand things, but I had a really stressful job and a three-year-old. And so I ended up getting an endoscopy, figuring out what was going on. You know, the doctor never asked me what I ate, never asked me what I drank, never asked me about my lifestyle, but I was just given two medications and a wave goodbye. So that was it, you know, and I just thought that couldn't be, that just couldn't be the answer. So I did some research and some homework, and I really used mostly food and supplements, either adding or eliminating, to fix it. So I just, you know, I figured I'm like, anybody can do this. Like, anybody can feel better regardless of what your starting point is. So that's kind of how I got to where I am now and why I'm so interested in helping people feel better.
Yeah, I think you made such a good point about, you know, number one, these magic bullets. And in the space of supplements, for example, I've heard too many people go down the route of, okay, I need more protein. Let me have protein shakes, only to find that they are actually taking in a lot of sucralose, you know, other sugar substitutes. And they're questioning, why am I not making progress in the right direction? Right. So I almost feel like with all of these magic bullet products, it's almost, you always have a price to pay. It's just a matter of, can you see them?
Yes. How quickly do they surface? And does it make you change anything about your habits or your lifestyle? Or are you using them to continue doing what you are doing, you know, which is why you kind of got to the problem you're facing in the first place?
And I think, you know, talking about things like magic bullets, and a lot of these things we mentioned are more applicable to, I think, modern medicine, modern healthcare. So maybe let's have a look at where we came from, actually. So food, for example, I was reading somewhere that an apple in the 70s has the equivalent of 26 apples today in terms of the nutrients you get from it. And granted, you know, it could have been a soundbite, or I don't know what the what research has gone into that number, but I can believe that our ancestors had more nutritious food than we do now.
Yeah, the soil was just richer and less depleted in most cases. And that's what feeds, you know, anything that grows, right? So the nutrients come from the soil. The soil's deficient, then the food is going to be more deficient. But my mom remembers hearing that when she was pregnant with me. So this is the 70s, and she was learning about how apples in the 70s were less nutritious than apples 50 years prior. So it's not new, you know, to our generation. And I do think it's, you know, there's definitely something to be said for that, you know, the soil and just the whole unprocessed nature of food. You know, we didn't have packaged and processed foods, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and especially thousands of years ago. We didn't have organic and conventional. I mean, it was food, and it was what you could find around you. So I think that's another, you know, question I have when people say like a paleo diet or an ancestral diet. I don't think that looks like one thing. I think it depends on where you came from. Where was your culture? Where was your, you know, climate? Were you near water? Were you in the mountains? Were you in a warm climate, a cold climate? And that really affected what you ate, right? And, but that was it. I mean, it wasn't, you know, going to the grocery store. I was just telling my son yesterday, in fact, we were driving from the grocery store and we were talking about growing food, and we have a garden. And I was like, you know, it's important to grow and have success with what you're growing. And especially back then, if my tomato plant doesn't make it, I can go to the store and I can go to the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. You know, thousands of years ago, hundreds of years ago, if your farm didn't make it, if your crop didn't make it, that was it. You know, hopefully you had neighbors, or, you know, you had canned or, you know, preserved food from, you know, another source. But, you know, that was, there just weren't any choices, right? And we had civilizations that were healthy and thriving no matter where they were. So I think that kind of leads to, you know, there's not really necessarily one thing that is great for everybody, but I would say that whole unprocessed foods are almost always a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up a good point about it depends on where you're from. I think, don't get me wrong, I love the fact that we can buy pretty much global ingredients now, right? So we can cook whatever we like from different cuisines. I think that's great. But I remember reading this book about different diets and the eternal debate, right? High carbs, high fats, all of that. And they were saying, well, think about an Eskimo. They can't grow wheat. Like, they literally just cannot grow carbs. So their diets are extremely high in fats, moderate protein. They're fine, right?
And I think tuning into what that means for us is kind of a lost art, right? Because you're right, we do have access to anything and everything. And so sometimes I don't think we take the time to figure out, like, what is really working for us? Like, did that make me feel good? Didn't it make me feel good? When do I feel better? When am I tired? When do I wake up feeling amazing versus like I drag myself out of bed? When do I want to take a nap in, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? So all of those things, I think that tracking and tuning in is a lost art that we need to bring back, because then you can figure out like what is going to work for your body.
Yeah. And thinking about, I'm just imagining, you know, hundreds of years ago, my ancestors in Asia somewhere, they probably also don't have the same sources of stress as we do now. They certainly don't have people texting them all the time, you know, their phones going off all the time, and, you know, news headlines nonstop. I just don't think life was as stressful. It was probably stressful for different reasons. There could be a panther coming at you, you know, correct, but it's just different to what we have now.
Yes. And that ties in perfectly to digestion. But you're right. The stressors were maybe more significant or serious, but they were acute, like meaning they had a beginning and an end, right? Like the animal was chasing you, or the enemy was upon you, or, you know, it was a severe weather storm. Like there was something very serious, but it had a beginning and an end usually. And if you survived, then you could go back to rest and digest, right? So your fight or flight was short-lived, and then you would go back to rest and digest. But our body's still kind of designed to react to stress as if it were fight or flight, right? Like as if it were acute and physical and serious. So, you know, we can breathe deeper. Our heart can beat faster. We send energy to our large muscle groups because we either needed to run or handle what was in front of us. And you're right, like now, cut to now, right? Like our body doesn't know the difference between being chased by the animal or checking our email 50 times a day or getting cut off in traffic or having a deadline or homeschooling or whatever it is that we're doing. But if you think about it, you're sitting in front of your computer stressed, your body's still reacting the same way as if you're being chased physically. Yep. So it does, you know, it doesn't really make sense, you know, to us that our body's reacting that way, but that's just how it's supposed to react. And it was perfectly adapted to what the stressors used to be. And when we're in a time of stress, our body also, you know, has to prioritize what's important and what's not. So as we're able to run or fight, it's also pressing the pause button on things like creativity, libido, reproduction, immunity, digestion. You know, your body's kind of like, we'll do that later. We're kind of in a crisis right now. And so if you think about how we're chronically stressed, you know, those things just aren't happening for us most of the time. Our body doesn't feel like it's in a state to build our immune system, to digest our food and absorb the nutrients, to, you know, reproduce, to be creative. You know, it's like those are all things for when we're in a rest and digest state, which most of us just aren't in very often.
Laura, I've got a question for you because you'll be good at this. I'm thinking of giving something small to a couple of my friends, but I've run out of ideas of what to give them.
Excuse me, what about my range of candles? The London one would be perfect for your evenings in. It's also made of coconut wax and essential oils, which makes them both vegan and pet friendly.
Oh my God, I cannot believe I've actually forgotten that you've got a whole range of candles.
All my candles, they're inspired by my travels.
For people who don't care for candles, Laura also has loads of other homeware products that are super chic and will be perfect for gifting for any occasion.
So my website is laurajacksondesign.com, or you can also find me on Instagram, Laura_Jackson_designs.
So everyone check out Laura's stuff now and use promo code nutrition to get 15% off any orders. That's promo code nutrition. Sometimes on Sundays, I do a complete detox. So I just put my phone down. I maybe check it once or twice, but I just do normal things, you know, do non-digital things. And I do find that it does help, especially with, I know a lot of people have that, maybe even unconsciously, they might not be aware of this, but a lot of people sleep quite badly on a Sunday in anticipation for the Monday. Right. And so I always make sure that Sunday, this is what I call it. It's my no brain day. I just literally don't exert myself at all. Maybe I'll go for a walk or just, you know, cook or something, but has to be literally not using my brain on a Sunday.
Yes, that's great. I mean, and I think too, you know, we have to get to the point where we're not wearing our lack of sleep like a badge of honor, because yes, I think there's that competition too, like, oh my God, I only slept 2 hours and I needed 7 cups of coffee to get through the day and I'm so tired and I need a nap. And we don't need, for the most part, to be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to anyone. Like my child lives in my house. I'm available to him you know, we're used to being at the ready and available 24 hours. And so, you know, that would be nice if we could kind of back off that a little bit and start with understanding between your family and friends and setting those expectations so they don't expect that from you. They don't get frustrated. They're not like, oh my God, it's been an hour and she hasn't gotten back to me. Or they don't worry about you. It's just like you, your group, your circle knows that's what you do on that day.
I think it's pretty evident that through human evolution, things haven't really got better. I think access has got better for sure. And don't get me wrong, I think technology allowing us to travel around, to see the world, to connect, you know, like us, for example, to connect from two different sides of the world, awesome. But it almost seems like the quality of our lives hasn't really improved in other aspects. And one particular topic that a lot of people have been talking about for the last, I don't know, decade is around detoxing. I think I believe in detoxing in quite a different way. So I've never done a juice cleanse or things like that. I am doing oil pulling. I just started and I love it. So I guess, Jill, could you tell us about detoxing? Is it a thing or are we just using this word to mean something completely different?
I think it's a, I think it's both. So I think that our bodies are meant to detox and we know how to detox. However, the burden is much different than what it used to be. So I think that detox can go awry. The idea of detox can go awry, but I think there's some definite, it's definitely legit in many ways, and it just needs to be done right. And the way that I like to think about it is we're really supporting our body in doing what it should be doing and what it knows how to do naturally. So we're not going to force it to do this, or we're going to, you know, pull this or push that or get this out, or, you know, I think it can have a really harsh tone, right? Detox is like, oh my gosh, I've got to be, you know, on the couch for 3 days while I'm detoxing. It's like, it shouldn't really work like that. Your body knows how to do it. And in fact, if you are feeling kind of crappy, it just means you're not, you're going too fast, right? You're asking your body to do something it's not currently capable of doing. So there's two parts really to detoxing, right? It's, you got to eliminate or minimize the toxin load. And then you have to support the body's ability to get whatever toxins are in or do come in out. So it's like prevent what's coming in and get what is in out. And the thing about the toxin load is that you don't have to live next to an oil refinery to have a significant toxic load these days. We get toxins from conventionally grown food, the pesticides that are sprayed. It's in some of our water, especially if you live in the city. Household cleaners and household products, personal care products, fragrances, plastics, pharmaceuticals. Anytime you smell that new car smell or like new mattress smell or new clothes smell, like whatever that is, like those are all chemicals, amalgam fillings, swimming pools, you know, vehicle exhaust, traffic. So it's really what is kind of compounding every day. And that's what toxins do. They bioaccumulate. So, you know, after being on this earth for decades, you know, you're probably storing a lot of toxins that your body is doing the best it can, but it's like, yikes, we've never really seen this toxic load before. You know, and if you think again, like back hundreds, thousands of years, there was just not this toxic load. It was a very nature-driven environment. And we're just not in that anymore. And again, like I love being able to get in my car and go, you know, to the store or to drive to a friend's house. But, you know, that is a modern convenience that causes, you know, toxicity. So keeping the toxins out as much as you can. You know, I live in just north of Los Angeles. There's so much I'm not going to be able to do, but it's important to control what I can control. So we eat organic as much as possible. We use, you know, drink filtered water. We get non-toxic household products, you know, cleaning products, personal care products. Our shampoos and lotions are all non-toxic. You know, so those kinds of things, you really can have an impact. You eat three times a day, right? Maybe you shower every day or you put on makeup every day. That's every day you're either adding toxins or not. So that really adds up. So keeping them from coming in and then also getting them out, right? So there's a few main ways that we excrete toxins. So we move our bowels, we urinate, We sweat, we breathe it out in our lungs, our lymphatic system helps, and then our liver processes toxins. So anything you can do to support any of those processes or organ systems are going to really be helpful. And I know so many people with, you know, GI upset or distress, or they don't move their bowels every day, or they're not drinking enough water. I mean, if you think, I think, what is it? About a quarter of Americans drink the recommended amount of water per day per the USDA. And that's only 8 to 10 glasses. So if you're maybe a petite woman size, that might be fine. But if you're a large guy, that's not even enough. And only 25% of Americans are getting that amount.
Yeah.
So there goes your urine, and there goes your sweat, and there goes your lymph. So, you know, we're not doing ourselves any favors with, you know, trying to get the toxins out.
I think that's another kind of, I guess, complaint I have with these recommended guidelines.
And even when they break it down to men and women, I mean, we vary quite a bit, women and men, when we, again, choose that one number or that one guideline and we put all of our eggs in that basket is where we can get into trouble. You know, we can get a book. It sounds great. This person had these amazing results. And so then I try it and I don't have these amazing results. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, what's wrong with me, right? We start to question ourselves or maybe our dedication, when really it wasn't a good fit for us. Because not only size-wise are we different, but our metabolism is different. Our predispositions are different. You know, we vary quite a bit. And so again, just back to that tuning in and kind of tracking what works
for you.
And
I love that you point out that people very quickly blame themselves, or they think, oh, it's because I don't have self-discipline. It's because I didn't follow this properly, or it's because I can't do it. But actually, the tool itself is incorrect in the fact that it might not be right for you. And I think that's just so important for people to remember. Stop blaming yourself, because you can do anything you want.
And it's easy to get, I don't even want to say sucked in, but it's easy to be enticed by these books and programs, because the people had such great success. And I have no doubt that the people that wrote these books or came up with these programs had wild success. And that's why they're passionate about sharing their information and what they learn. But you do have to maybe use it as a template, but tweak it and listen to your body, you know, as to whether that's, you know, working for you as an individual, because you're not that person.
And with detoxing, do any of these have an element of truth in them, or are they just purging your body basically? So you could have done it with anything.
It depends. I don't think there's a flat answer for all of it. I think to some extent, if you're cutting out, say, processed foods, almost no matter what you're taking in is going to be helpful, right? It's going to help, you know, rid your body of toxins, because you're not constantly bombarding your body with toxins for that 4 days or 8 days or however long you're doing it. I do think that whatever you want to undertake, you have to just be open to the clues or the red flags that it might not be going well. So like extreme tiredness is not good. That you don't need to do that with detox. You know, head pain, did I say low energy? Yeah, feeling really tired, low energy, head pain, even skin irritations can indicate that you're trying to detox too fast. If it can't go through your liver gets congested just due to all the pummeling, you know, over the years and decades. And then you try to detox, right? You're asking your liver to do a lot. And, you know, so sometimes it's like, well, there are too many toxins for me. I'm going to push it out of the skin. Or I'm going to, you know, I got to figure out a way to get these toxins out that my body is now asking me to get rid of. So I think that there is a time and a place to quote unquote detox, but it really just means eliminating the garbage. I mean, that's going to be a detox. So, you know, eliminating packaged food, processed food, artificial sweeteners, colors, flavors, you know, things with pesticides, going to more organic foods, whole organic foods. You can certainly, there are foods that are great for detoxing. Cruciferous vegetables are great. Beets are great. Green tea is great. Flax seeds, garlic, leafy greens, lemon. if you want to incorporate those into your diet, I mean, you can definitely help your body along. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if, you know, it's, I don't know if it's a wise idea to do the, you know, 8 days of, you know, water, 8 days of juice, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And I know that you teach people some pitfalls when it comes to getting healthy. So maybe now is a good time to pivot into that.
Yes. So I have a couple of pitfalls that I like to avoid, and we've kind of even touched on some of them. So I'll just go through them and expand on the ones that we haven't really addressed. So one of them is that we forget our why. So why do you want to lose weight? Why do you want to eat clean? Why do you want to work out more? And keeping this top of mind, will always put any changes that you're trying to make into perspective. So if you're just saying like, oh, I'm going to eat anti-inflammatory foods. Well, what does that mean? You know, but if you say, I want to eat these because I want to get on the floor and play with my 10-year-old mm-hmm. because my joints don't hurt, that is something that you can hang on to as like your goal or your reason. So I think we just forget about it. We want to go to the gym. We want to lose 10 pounds. Why do we want to do that? So that's one. The next is that, and we kind of touched on this, it's like, we think it's all about the food, you know, and we've kind of touched on all of the other areas that are have an impact. So stress and work and physical activity and relationships and toxic overload and sleep. You know, you can eat all the salads and smoothies you want, but if you're working 80 hours a week or you're in a toxic relationship or you're not sleeping or you're overscheduled, mm-hmm. you know, at best you'll see some improvements and then plateau. But most of the times we don't see improvements. And then again, we, you know, feel frustrated and, you know, we start kind of blaming ourselves or wondering where did we go wrong when it's really, we just need to step back and take a holistic view. The next one is that, and we kind of really have touched on this the whole time, is like, we've lost touch with what our bodies and minds know, love, and are familiar with. So that's just thinking, always putting it through that filter. Like, is this natural? Is this what bodies or minds were supposed to do mm-hmm. or supposed to experience? So I always think that's a helpful filter to, run things by, you know, especially if you're going to make a change. We already discussed, we think a certain lifestyle will work for everyone. Mm-hmm. And again, back to just tuning in and tracking. And I'm a big advocate of tracking. Nothing like that's going to add stress, but really trying to
take out the guesswork,
see trends.
Right.
Exactly. If you eat, you know, eggs, say, you know, 3 mornings a week, and every afternoon after you eat eggs, you want to take a nap. That might be something to take a look at. You know, maybe that's not the right food for you, or oatmeal or whatever. Or do you have digestive upset? I mean, when we eat something and it doesn't agree with us, we know pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But there's so many things that have, you know, a 6-hour, a 12-hour, a 24-hour delayed response. And you're never going to know that unless you start tracking it mm-hmm. and you can see trends. So I'm a big advocate of that because you're right. It takes out the guesswork and it really allows you to figure out what works for you, because that's what's most important. Like, if oatmeal worked for everybody on the planet, but it doesn't work for you, it's important to know it doesn't work for you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to figure out, and again, not just noting digestive distress, but things like, you know, do you want to take a nap? What's your mood? You know, do you have mood fluctuations? How do you feel when you wake up in the morning? Do your joints like creak and ache? Were you able to sleep soundly? Those things are all, you know, impacted by what we eat. Mm-hmm. And then last, this is my favorite, is we try to make 50 changes overnight. Mm-hmm. So this is so key, especially at this time of year, right? We're like going to make a resolution and we're going to, you know, starting today, know this, only that. Mm-hmm. And I've done those 7-day challenges and I've made New Year's resolutions and 21-day challenges. And sometimes they work, but, you know, for how long? Is it really sustainable? And then after that 7-day challenge or 21-day challenge, you know, there's a day 8 and there's a day 22. And then we usually just go back to like, oh, thank God, now I can go back to what I was doing. And then we're surprised when those same health issues come right back with it. So I'm big, big, big into making small but impactful changes. And this may not be sexy or thrilling, but they work. Like, they last, because it's like, mm-hmm. that's how we can make changes for the long term. So I'm not super concerned what you can do today or tomorrow. I want to know, can you do this in 5 years? could you do this in 10 years? Like, is this really a lifestyle change that you can sustain? And that's another time where tracking comes into play. Because we're not like, oh my God, I lost 10 pounds in like 7 days. We can get to the point where we're like, oh, I don't even know if this is working, or I don't even see any changes, because day to day, it kind of looks the same as the day before. But I have my clients fill out a checklist. I have every kind of symptom and issue I could think of, from like headaches to dizziness to sleep to weight gain to, you know, all sorts of skin issues. And I have them check every single thing that they are experiencing. And then we do that 6 weeks later, and then another 6 weeks later. And I've never had any client that's not made an improvement. And most of the times it's significant. And they don't even remember what was happening, right? Because when it happens over time, they're like, oh my God, that's right. I was having problems sleeping. Oh my gosh, that's right. I was having headaches. I totally forgot. So another good opportunity to track, just to give yourself that motivation and understanding that you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, no, I love those five. I think if people don't take away anything from this episode, I think just remember these pitfalls. And you made this is a good segue, actually, into my next question. When it comes to setting New Year's resolutions, we all know the statistics, 90% of people fail, right? You talk about the number of people signing up for a gym membership in January and dropping off in February, things like dry January. And even if people stay dry the whole month, you're right on it 1st of February. Right. And I kind of don't feel like that's the point of dry January. And again, you know, more and more of these things like Veganuary, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, Jill, what are your thoughts on setting New Year's resolutions? And perhaps you can give our listeners three actionable tips so they can actually set themselves up for success thinking about their New Year's resolutions.
So, one is going to go back to taking small steps. I would think of things like as simple as, I'm going to drink half my body weight in water every day, and do that for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then add on. So you can come up with a list of all the things you want to do, but implementing them one at a time is key. So I already mentioned sustainable, but when you're going to do something that's drastic, and I'm not saying never to do that. Sometimes we have the luxury of taking it slow, and sometimes we don't, depending on what our health status is. Sometimes we need to make big changes, or we just want to, and we're ready for it. So when you make big changes, I want you to learn from that, or to use it as a springboard. But always keep in mind, what is this going to look like when I go back to my quote unquote normal or my day to day? So yeah, I can eat salads and smoothies for a week, but what is that teaching me, right? So you want to take whatever you're doing and extract what is going to look like in your normal life, you know, 6 months, 1 year down the line. And the other thing is that I don't think you need to wait till January, or I don't think you need to start in January. You know, I mean, I have people, you know, clients that December 1st are like, that's it. I'm ready. And they do, they sail because they've made that decision that this is the time. So you don't need to go nuts. I mean, I get why January 1st makes sense. It's Thanksgiving. It's the holidays, you know, it's Christmas, it's the new year, it's Hanukkah, it's whatever you celebrate. So it makes sense, but it doesn't, we don't have to be stuck to that. If it's February 1st or July 15th or March 23rd, it doesn't really matter. So I think just making a plan and figuring out when it's right for you, like, when do you want to make a change? Because if you're in it, it'll work. If you're not in it, you're doing it because it's January 1st. The success rate, as you said, is, you know, below 10% for New Year's resolution. So those would be the few things that I would say to keep in mind as we approach this new year.
Yeah, that's amazing. I cannot agree more. I think, and it's also never too late, right, to want to change.
100%. 100%. I think you can make changes at any stage, any age, and any health level. Mm-hmm. If you are, you know, fairly healthy, but you want to take it up a notch, you can do that. If you, you know, have been diagnosed with something serious, you can still make changes to your diet and lifestyle and improve wherever you are. Because I always say, I'm like, this is available to anyone, regardless of starting point. Whatever your starting point is, you can go up.
And Jill, a final question that I've asked all my guests so far. What food always takes you to your happy place?
I'm going to say tacos. One, because I love them and you can fill them with anything. But two, because my son, who is 10, also loves them. And I can shove almost anything in a taco shell and he will eat it, like in a tortilla. I mean, vegetables, beans, like you name it, and he will eat it. So when we have a happy meal, it always makes me happy. So I do love tacos, but I love them because like my whole family enjoys them. And that makes for a pleasant meal.
And that's it for this episode of Neighborhood Nutritionist. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I hope you've really enjoyed it and learned something you can take away with you today. If you could take a second to share this episode with one person you think will love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. See you soon!